This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Cook County Clerk David Orr. David has had a lengthy and distinguished career in public service, including serving as an alderman for 11 years, vice mayor of the City of Chicago, 7-day mayor of the City of Chicago, in which he said, "I'm the only big city mayor who did not raise taxes." And since the last 28 years, he has been the clerk of Cook County, one of the largest election jurisdictions in the United States. David addressed several issues, two which he said are very serious threats to democracy. Number one, voter suppression, and number two, money in elections. Both serve to undermine our trust in democracy. David's pointed out that we're still fighting over who should be allowed to vote, and that voter suppression is real. Clerk Orr said that both parties have suppressed voters over time, and that recent Supreme Court decisions over who should be allowed to vote have only served to exacerbate the situation. He's very disappointed in the Citizen United decision of several years ago by the Supreme Court because he said money, rather than people, are currently shaping public policy. Tons of money, David indicated, goes into TV advertisement, and they wreak havoc with voters who do not know what to believe. Clerk David Orr said that his approach to government is, number one, hire good people. This will produce efficiency and effectiveness. Making all contracts competitively bid. Consolidating duplication of government, such as when he joined with recent Mayor Richard Michael Daley to consolidate birth and death records, reducing 17 employees to 3 employees. He also spoke about the coming merger of the clerk and the recorder's office as being increased efficiency and effectiveness, and using technology to meet public services. In 28 years in office, he claims to have returned $40 million to taxpayers. The burden of registration, he said at the end of his remarks, should fall on government and not the public. If the government is in charge of registration, we can save money, be more efficient, and keep cleaner lists of voters.
Thank you, Jay. I've gotten a kick out of you for many, many years. And I know you laughed when he mentioned that long term as mayor. I heard that laugh. But it's important to understand I'm the only big city mayor that you'll ever meet that raised no taxes in my entire term. So, had it been 8 days, I'm not sure. Okay, I'm only going to tell you one joke, but I have to tell you this one. And given particularly some of the people here at my table, you know, Les McKeever, who was very instrumental in helping Harold Washington, Mark Donovan, who he and his father are very involved in a lot of Chicago politics, and many of you do. So here's a story. Back in the 80s, when people like me in the city council with the so-called independents would speak, the regular Democrats would make lots of noise. And the day of a council meeting, I was talking with Fred Rohde. And I can tell the story because Fred Rohde is deceased. Fred Rohde was the first ward boss and the alderman. He was also mobbed up, and he went to jail for mob activities, which I won't describe. But at the time, Fred was telling me that his wife's maiden name was the same as mine, Orr. I was kind of shocked. I didn't know it. I was speaking later at the city council meeting that day, and the guys were in the corner, Mel, Burke, you know, Rohde, always make a lot of noise. Their goal was to try and make sure the press couldn't pay attention to us. But it was a game. When you're in politics, you just live with games and don't think much of it. And so I was speaking. I paused quickly and said, and pointed to the group, "We can see that even though Fred's wife is married to an Orr, hasn't done me any good," thought nothing of it, sat down. 23 reporters walk or run from their spot way over there and shove a bunch of microphones in my face and say, "Did you just call Fred's wife a whore?" All day long, I got those messages. "Hey, Orr, the cement truck's out front for you." So, it actually, you know, those were tough times, but it was a lot of fun. So what I want to talk about today, and I'm trying to do too much, but bear with me. What I want to do is discuss what I consider are very serious threats to our democracy. particularly the impact of voter suppression and money in politics. But I also want to try and connect that to the threats of the ongoing war on government and those constant attacks, which frankly have weakened Americans' belief in self-government. 60 years ago, 73% of Americans said they thought the government did the right thing most of the time. Pew's recent study suggests that number is now 19%. Why? Many Americans have to fight like hell just to have their say. 50 years after the Voting Rights Act, we're still fighting over which Americans should be allowed to vote. We're still fighting over attempts to limit the electorate. And the most basic, most fundamental American ideal, and that is the right to change government at the ballot box, is under assault. These things chip away at the faith that we have in the idea of America, and voter suppression is real. That's why the 2013 Supreme Court decision to gut the Voting Rights Act is so detrimental. It removed the states that formerly had to have preclearance before they could pass new election laws. And they argued that there was no longer a need for it, even though the Congress, including Republicans, had voted to keep it. Immediately after that, many states imposed really bad voter registration suppression laws. Okay. And it's not like voter suppression is particularly new, and I'm not trying to be too partisan here. It is true the Republican Party has been behind the enormous amount of voter suppression the last few years. But remember, I'm kind of a big city Democrat, and I've been around since 1979 when I was first elected. And there is no doubt the Democratic machine can and will and has suppress votes wherever possible. But things have gotten worse because the Supreme Court decision has affected so many things, particularly like in places like Texas, Wisconsin, let's say North Carolina. I'm only going to touch on this briefly. A recent study published by the University of Chicago Press said that voter suppression efforts disproportionately impact black and Latino voters. The study notes that the effects of the voter ID are, quote, in some ways similar to the impact of measures like poll taxes, literacy tests, and residence requirements used to deny blacks many basic rights. Again, there's lots of different kinds of suppression. I don't want to lump it all in the same boat here, but a lot of this is intentional. Recently in Texas, they took the extraordinary measure to prevent students from voting, including not accepting the state of Texas ID given to all students in Texas. But gun licenses are okay. In North Carolina, they passed a pretty egregious law eliminating same-day registration, imposing strict voter IDs, and the court basically said that these disproportionately hurt African Americans. They further said, quote, they retained only those types of photo ID disproportionately held by whites and excluded those disproportionately held by African Americans. That's the key to understanding voter suppression. It is surgical, and for the most part, it's intentional. It's hard to discuss this topic, I guess, without touching briefly on the president's silliness about widespread voter fraud. Let me be clear, as an election authority for one of the largest jurisdictions in the country for nearly 28 years, there is no large-scale voter fraud. And don't take it from me, but take it from nearly every Republican Secretary of State in the country who has also ridiculed President Trump's claims. So his new commission is baseless and possibly dangerous because it starts out with people that have a prejudice. Anyway, we'll see. I think it's going to result in undermining trust in democracy, but we'll see where they go with it. Still, some people do cheat, and some people try and cheat. And that shouldn't be a surprise to anyone in this room. Over the years, my office has handled many cases. We've turned over the state's attorney and successfully prosecuted a few of those. And we're using all the tools at our disposal to identify and fight any attempts to cheat the system. But I was disappointed when our previous state's attorney did not act to prosecute on indictable offenses which we gave them. And basically by not indicting, it led others to try and do the same thing. Thankfully, our current state's attorney, Kim Fox, has indicted the alleged ringleader from 2.5 years ago, and I suggest more will be coming. So remember, we don't want to get in this game. There is no fraud or there is massive fraud. Okay. The bottom line is there are some people going to try and cheat the system. Our job is to be vigilant and try and stop it wherever possible. Okay. And the problem, now let me just jump quickly to money in politics. And this problem started far, far sooner than the 2010 Citizens United decision. But this decision particularly opened the floodgates for money rather than people to increasingly shape public policy. And that's really important. It's not just elections, it's shaping the public policy. For example, just take Illinois in 2014. Of the money raised for political campaigns, 51% came from millionaires. 51% of the money came, not very many of them. Okay. Our current campaign laws, to summarize this, one, are limiting dramatically who can successfully run for office. Two, increasing substantially the role of the wealthy and corporate donors, that is drowning out the average citizens' voices. This not only affects who wins, but as I said before, it increasingly determining public policy. Just as troubling is the move toward permanent campaigns. And here in Illinois, we're presently watching two billionaires, no offense to either one of them, running TV ads 18 months before a general election. I ask you, how can you have a democratic system when that is allowed to happen? How can you have a democratic system when billionaires can advertise without restriction 18 months before an election? No other democracy in the world does this, okay? But we are tend to blind to other countries because they may have some good ideas. But the Supreme Court seems to think that's fair. Even billionaires have First Amendment rights. But I say no. You can't yell fire in a theater, you can't own the airwaves, and you can't drown out all other voices. Further, the vast majority of this money, where does it go? TV ads, most of which are negative and downright nasty, too often filled with lies or half-truths, both parties. These ads wreak havoc with the voters who do not know what to believe. And all they can think is, well, this guy's a crook, and that guy's a crook, and this one's a fool, what am I going to do? And the newspapers, frankly, don't do a lot to help us out on that. This all contributes to increasingly our public's lack of faith in government and democracy. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. There are creative experiments going on around the country to try and find ways to let people's voices rise above this flood of money. For example, in Seattle, a great experiment's going on. Back in 2015, they passed a law that, quote, democratic vouchers. So every citizen gets 4 vouchers, each worth $25, to give their favorite candidates. I almost laugh if I think we try to do that in Chicago, and I hate to say that, but, you know, we are a little bit of a different mentality here. But I think it's a great experiment. There's already more people participating. And for the first time, it's going on now, 2017, so I'm anxious to see what happens. Also, California has recently made it more difficult to give dark money. Dark money is it's really, really serious problem, which is essentially anonymous donations that are very hard or impossible to track. So what they're trying to do out there is, first of all, they say the top 10 donors, and remember they have lots of ballot measures in California where hundreds of millions of dollars are spent, the top 10 donors for ballot measures must be identified. Okay, then they go a step further. If one of those groups is a generic name, then they have to disclose the top 2 donors to that generic name. For example, one of the top 10 donors, something called New Approach Committee. Okay, but under rules, the top 2 donors, and usually if you know what's really going on, I assume most of you in the room do, people get paid a lot of money. They paid a fortune of money to try and confuse the electorate on a regular basis. And so they pay us money, they have advertising. Remember, there's no limits on advertising. There's no truth in advertising. Okay, so at least California is trying to find a way to force the public to be able to understand who's real money behind some of these measures. Another idea, small donor matching, which has been successful in New York City Council and other places out east. The Brennan Center found, quote, the system engages voters early in the election campaign, encourages them to stay connected to candidates. This year in Illinois, Senator Biss proposed small donor matching, which passed the Senate. And just last month, Commissioner Garcia introduced a similar bill in the county board. Basically, you take smaller contributions of $25 to $150 from local donors, and they'll be matched at a 6-to-1 by public funds. Why should we fund these programs? Strengthening our democracy is an easy bucket to put our money in. These programs will help level the playing field. Just one positive note on voter suppression. We saw the federal court striking down a number of the worst laws over the past couple of years, particularly in Texas, Virginia, Wisconsin, North Carolina. The Justice Department of Obama performed very well, I think, in this area, along with the ACLU, the Brennan Center, the Lawyers Committee under Civil Rights. All of them pushed hard to get the court, I think, to act appropriately. And there are presently a lot of organizations throughout the country that are navigating this maze of restrictions for voters to try and help them through, get them properly registered where there's very oppressive laws. And I'm certainly not optimistic about the Supreme Court protecting these rights, but these groups are doing a good job, and we should all support them. Now, I've talked about some obvious threats in kind of a hurry about voter suppression and money in politics. Now, let me try and connect that to what I said before, the attack on or the misuse of government. Okay, that has another great deal to do with damaging what Americans believe in self-government. On the one hand, you've got a right-wing anti-government ideology that sees government as the public enemy rather than a public servant. And on the other hand, as we've seen historically here in Chicago, you've had traditional machine politics that misuses government power for personal and political gain. Both lead to inept, inefficient government that earns the scorn of the public. And just for fun, because I'm a historian part of the time, back in 1912, Woodrow Wilson, I love Teddy Roosevelt, but I got to use Wilson. Wilson said, the government, which was designed for the people, has got into the hands of the bosses and their employers, the special interest, an invisible empire has been set up above the forms of democracy. Certainly rings true to me. There is certainly a role for citizens and for corporations, and I'm glad, for example, that companies like Microsoft, Apple's, and others have lobbied strongly in support of climate change. But the key is the government needs to be the fair referee, looking out for the public. Neil Steinberg, our own brilliant Neil Steinberg at the Sun-Times, just last week said, government raises armies, paves roads, and makes hard choices that nobody else is willing to make. We cannot separate government from democracy. You can't say you love democracy and hate government. Government, with all its faults, is how democracy functions. Democracy is just not about elections. Okay? All sorts of dictators have elections, and quasi-democracies have elections. Democracy is helping society meet those needs that can't be done by individuals or companies. To make a democracy work, I say it's not just the elections, there also has to be that social contract, that glue, that culture, facts, basic rules, certain things that bring people together despite our cultural, religious, ethnic differences. And that's what's disappearing when you hear that just 19% of Americans believe their government is working for them. Now, I'm really not an alarmist, but I am deeply concerned. And I want to make a few suggestions about what I believe in, relating back to the county clerk's office, which is what I do most of the time. For example, when I was first elected way back in 1990, it's been a long time, I said the office was a reformer's dream. The reason I think I went from a relatively interesting city council position to the clerk is I really believed in this. I wanted to prove that you could run an office in Chicago and Cook County that was efficient and really good public service. And here are the things some we did. As for personnel, my first priority was hiring good people. You can't run good government without hiring good people whose main priority is efficiency and customer service, not their political value. As for contracts, the priority has got to be competitive bids, demanding the best products, and understanding the sneaky, rotten deals that happen in this town all the time. And if you understand that, you're going to get what you need out of the vendors. You're going to get better products and better prices. Otherwise, you'll continue to be gouged by letting the favored few get those contracts. Consolidations. I've supported consolidations for years. Many of you don't know this. In 2009, Mayor Daley and I, which were not really a household item, we actually cooperated in combining things way back in 2009. The city used to have part of the birth record and death record policy. They wanted the money. But the mayor got pretty upset. They had long lines, were pretty ineffective. So basically, they turned all that over to us. Okay, so now there'd be one-stop shopping, much more efficient. They didn't have to go to the city the first 6 months, then to us. The bottom line is it ended up after that quick, small move, we now had three people doing what they had 17 doing, and the public was well served. And thanks to the public and the county board, we're about to merge the recorder's office with the clerk's office. That will make it easier for some and save at least $2 million to begin with. And if it's implemented well, it will be more than that. And that money does add up. And if I had a magic wand, we'd have merged election authorities in Chicago and Cook County a long time ago at a savings of over $5 million a year, and that's a low estimate, by the 2012 Joint Committee on City-County Collaboration. Just think how much money would have saved if that was done 25 years ago. And it's not to say we don't cooperate. My buddy Lance is right here, runs the City Board of Elections. We do cooperate. We work together. I'm desperate. I call Lance. He might give me some staff, vice versa. We're short of machines. I call Lance. So we do try and work together. But if the operations were merged and done well, there's other savings you could make. Also, not much is more important than technology, improving efficiency and customer service. Our tax department has really done an incredible job on TIFs, which is kind of the last pot of gold left in Chicago. We've tried to shed light on the money in the districts and how it's generated. And so we brought in this online TIF viewer. And, you know, my staff are great. You can look at every TIF in the city and county, and you can zero down on exactly the boundaries. You can see the money that's been put into it and so forth. Last year, we launched what's called the Running for Office Starter Kit to make the process of running for office a little more manageable. Online things, you can find out everything you need to know, because we need a lot of good candidates. It's particularly intimidating for some. And also, when we do these things, we share the code with anybody else. Because if we can do it, why not let them benefit from it, too? For example, we've done this with past other applications, including we developed an online thing for, what do you call this, Statement of Economic Interest. 30,000 people got a send in to us in this county. But now Lake County has taken it, and other counties are considering taking it. All these things help to why we won Microsoft's Innovation Award. And it's not because of me. I'm a bit technologically limited, okay? But that's why you hire good staff. So you can be a bumpkin and hire good staff and get good things done, and I'm unfortunately to do that. Now, even with new responsibilities in elections, in taxes, in vital records, my office has returned close to $40 million over these last 28 years. Some things you do are well received. Others, not so much. Some of you may remember the midnight pay raises. It's something that always bugged me. It was a constant process. And, you know, remember, most of, unfortunately, the bad part of government is the insider deals. So the process simply was, if you're an alderman, you get elected in April, and then you raise your pay before you're sworn in May. If you're a county commissioner, you get elected in November, you raise the pay before you get sworn in November. I mean, it should be December 1st. And that was happening all through the state. And it was a big one called the midnight pay raise scandal, hit around 1993 or 1994. I was really ticked. I'm actually shocked because we went to Springfield. I don't know how we passed it, but we did. Maybe there was a lot of fervor at the time. There's where the newspapers were a big help. So basically, we got the law changed saying that for elected officials, you have to have a pay raise passed 6 months before the election. Now, again, it doesn't mean you don't have any pay raises, but it does mean there'd be more public in doing that. By the way, yours truly has not had a pay raise in a long, long time. There are personal costs for good government, accountability costs. So my point is a simple one. I think you know it. But when you run an office that is not based on traditional insider deals, you're going to run a more efficient operation, you're going to save taxpayer money, and you can deliver better service. And you're going to make some enemies. But this, to me, is a way to restore faith in government. I love it when I walk down the street. Oh, I love your website. I really like it. I came to your office. I got this. That, to me, is truly meaningful. Quickly, a couple other things, because I don't have the time to talk about all the other things that we could all be doing. Just a couple. Training of public employees. There's more than 100,000 just in Cook County alone, far more than that. If you are serious about training your employees, you can make average employees really great employees. There are certain things you can do, okay? Furthermore, we should be doing a lot more cross-training because we need to save. To take the taxing departments in Cook County, assessor, treasurer, recorder, clerk, board of review, okay? If there's more cross-training, okay, so people can do other skills and they have the ability to do it, then you can reduce staff, not by firing people, but by when people leave, you don't replace them. And cross-training can do it. And just think if we did that in a serious way in the big cities and the big states. And we obviously need more consolidations. There are well-researched reports on the excessive governments. And just we can't survive the future and what's coming down. I see that some of the struggling suburbs in suburban Cook County, some desperately struggling suburbs, they don't have money to pay for police and so forth. And some of these are three precincts in size. Some of them are only 1,400 voters. There's a lot we can do right now. I don't see the leadership for it. And it's not easy to do. Everybody wants their own little thing. No offense to Stone Park, but I don't know. Stone Park has three precincts and probably about 35 policemen. You start combining some of those units, and you're going to have a lot of savings. Okay. So I know the challenges are enormous, but let me end with a final example. It has to do with the passing of automatic voter registration. You might have seen the news on that. It's important to me anyway. It's part of a larger vision of what I call a voter registration renaissance. It began with fighting for motor voter way back in the 90s. It followed by early voting, so everybody could vote because we still vote on a work day. Voting by mail, teenagers working as election judges, election day registration, and now we have another critical part of this puzzle, automatic voter registration, assuming the governor signs it, and he said he would. The key is it takes the burden of updating voter registrations off the backs of voters and shifts on the government where it belongs. This is important. These people are not, they're not just slobs and they don't want to register. Most people do not realize every time you move, you have to re-register. There was 700,000 people just last year, before the last election, that were dutifully registered, but registered at the wrong address. Okay, that doesn't help anyone. Part of what we're doing here with the automatic voter registration is making it easier for the public, at the same time saving money and efficiencies and having cleaner lists. And nothing is more important than Lance and I than clean lists. Do we want to send to our roughly 1.5 million voters each all these mailings that are going to someone that moved a year ago, 2 years ago, died 4 years ago? There's a lot of things going on to improve this process, so I think it's really good. So what I think is important about that is that with the help of this Just Democracy Coalition and some of them I think in the room and some good legislators in Springfield, one, we passed this law, which is a good example of efficiency. It ain't sexy, okay? But it's really important because everything we do to make government work more efficiently is a plus for us, and we save money. It's also important because in this political climate of the warfare in Springfield and no budget and the partisanship, the fact that we can come together, both sides, particularly because of the work of the citizen-based groups, and pass this legislation, even though it passed last year, but the governor vetoed it, pass it this year, unanimous in both houses, which means the governor has to sign it. That's the kind of thing that can make a difference. So I'm not going to stop there. I really believe in this stuff. I've been teaching about these issues for many years, and I still do believe, despite my anger at a lot of this, that hard work, sacrifice, and dedicated public servants can restore the soul of a democracy, and we do desperately need that. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Absolutely.
Thank you, David. Some very interesting ideas have been thrown out and challenges to all of us, and we have a few questions here. Let's see what we have here, David. By the way, you know, David's had many different positions that he's held over the years, and one he didn't mention, I guess you were the final football coach for the Mundelein College ladies football team. Undefeated Super Bowl champions, those Mundel Bundles. Let's give them a big round of applause.
Always be careful what you talk about at the luncheon table.
Absolutely. This is from Marcia Dillon. Marcia, where are you? Okay. What is your reaction to Representative Mike Quigley's assertion that Illinois State Election Board data was hacked?
Well, let me make it clear. It's true the State Board of Elections, its voter registration, there were some names in there that were hacked. The deeper issue is what we're all worried about. What does the future hold? Let me a couple quick things. First of all, we're not surprised what the Russians did or are trying to do. That's pretty obvious these days. Here's what we do. But let me start with this. We assume that everything that we do is going to be hacked. We start with that assumption. It's going to be hacked sooner or later. We're going to do all we can to prevent that. One of the ways we prevent it, we start at the end. What do we have? We have paper for everything. If the worst thing happened, we have a paper record of all the votes by the paper ballots, and we have a paper record of all the votes electronically. So even if something happened, which it hasn't, we spent a great deal of time, particularly Noah Prates, you know, my director of elections, Lance here with the city, working with the Homeland Security. What we're trying to do is we're doing risk assessments all the time, and I think we're pretty good at it. So remember, that's just voter registration systems, but it could go further. But the best I can say is, so far, we've been pretty good. We have a lot of things in place. We have smart people. So, yes, Mike Quigley is right to suggest that people are trying to probe all the time. They're always doing fishing expeditions to try and crack in. So far, we stopped them, but I'm not going to tell you all of our secrets of the future. Okay.
Okay, thanks, David. This is from a retired federal court employee. F. Terry, where are you, F? Okay, right back there. She wants to know, what is your relationship with Tony Preckwinkle? Let's keep this, you know.
Well, I mean, Tony's a president. I'm the clerk. I think we've worked together pretty well. I mean, I was around trying to make some of the changes long before she got there. The thing that I perhaps like the most about what Tony does is the stuff relating to prisons, human rights, and how she continues to remind us that what we're really still failing on is an important issue for America and Chicago today is race and that connection between race and poverty, which is unfortunately what our criminal justice system does. So I'm not sure what the question really implies, but we work together on a lot of things. So I wish her well, and I wish me well. Thank you.
And we wish both of you well. Boy, this hacking issue, a lot of questions. This is from Al Manning. Al, where are you?
Uh-oh.
Back there. You know Al.
I know Al.
Of course. Sandbagging is legal at the City Club, you know. The Russians have hacked Illinois election records. What are you, the city, and the State Board of Elections doing to prevent problems?
Well, I think I tried to answer that. I can't speak for other jurisdictions, but what I told you was that, remember, they didn't hack elections. They did hack some voter registration databases. And the first thing, of course, they did and we did is, if there are any of those people in our jurisdiction, we, of course, immediately contacted them because there the concerns were not about voting and that kind of fraud. The concerns were private information getting out into the wrong hands. Otherwise, I don't know if I should repeat myself, but we try and do a lot of things. We work with Homeland Security. We work with the FBI. We do something called forensic testing. Very few people in the nation do that, which is, again, beyond my pay grade. But basically what it means is, since we're always worried about malicious software somehow sneaking into the system, forensic testing, what we do with that is we're able to take a picture of the software while we're preparing things in the warehouse before Election Day, on Election Day, after Election Day. And we do believe, and we've done a lot of studies on this and done a lot of analysis. And so I think we're pretty good shape. But as I said before, you've got to be vigilant. It is going to happen. They're going to try. But there's a lot of other pluses on our side, you know, even the fact of the decentralization of the election process, the fact that, you know, various counties do things differently, 102 different jurisdictions plus the seven that are separate, like Alliance's thing in Chicago. So there are a lot of things that we're doing. I feel pretty comfortable, but I would never say it's never going to happen.
Okay. David, one of the questions I didn't quite understand, if you could refer back to it. You talked about Seattle, and you said that every voter receives four
vouchers.
$25 vouchers,
right,
that they can use to support any of their candidates.
Right.
And where is this money coming from, and how much is involved? Do you have them?
I don't have the exact dollar amount. In other words, Seattle, they thought it was important, so they actually came up with public money, a very small percentage of their larger budget. But they came up with that as the experiment. The goal, clearly, and I think the audience understands it, is that in this day and age, when there's so many, such power the incumbents have, and the role of money, remember, a lot of people give money to incumbents. They don't like the incumbents, but you give one good vote, and you're generally going to give them money. So it's very hard for non-incumbents if you want to kind of make the system a little more competitive. So that's what this does. And again, comparing it, it's the same principle as out east with small donor matching. They just went a little further. But already, I don't have the numbers now. I've seen them, I think, someplace. But already people are getting engaged. The elections, I don't think, are until September, the primary. But already people are engaged with their candidates giving some money. Again, I think it's a great idea. I do worry because I can't help it, but everything that I look at with good ideas all around the country or around the world, I have to put my Chicago, Cook County glasses on. And I do worry because we do have a little bit more intimidation and tough stuff. And I could see it would be a little more challenge for us to implement those vouchers the right way. But it doesn't mean we don't keep trying. So it'll be just a good experiment to watch.
And that intimidation and tough stuff, since you're the county clerk, obviously involves various county jurisdictions. The city has really cleaned up its act over the years. Correct, Lance?
Yes, they have.
Well, I think both the city and county have done a really good job on this front. But the fact is, you can go back to Jefferson's quote, but you really have to stay vigilant. People try and do things all the time. This is still a machine town. Okay, now I give the mayor credit for getting out from under Shackman. Whether that's really out from under Shackman, who knows? I remember when you used to laugh at me in 1998 and 2000, 2001, I kept saying, they're still patronage hiring all over the place. Oh, no, that's gone. And then, of course, some of Daley's top people went to jail, and it all came out that the shenanigans were still going on. So when you've got, remember, we have a lot of people that are confused about voting or don't vote, but insiders know government has enormous power and enormous money. And there's millions of people out there trying to find a way to get their hands on that money, okay? So voting is important. So I never want to underestimate, just an example. It's been, maybe 15 years since I had to go out to Cicero because they were arresting people for registering Latinos to vote. That was before they realized they're going to, whether they liked it or not, there's going to be a lot of Latinos, and they better join that side. And I could give you all sorts of examples like that, or picking on Cicero again. Not too long ago, I had to go out there because the reform mayor, had hired 50, 60 off-duty Chicago cops with guns and put them all the polling places. So it took me a while to get all those people out of there. They had no, quote, legitimate function. So there's always things that people do in this city, in this county, and all throughout the country. And our job is to be smart and try and be ahead of the game and not discourage others, not to frighten others, but to try and be ahead of the game so we can put things in place to minimize the damage that they may do.
Thank you very much. Let's give David a big round of applause. Don't leave.